Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot is daf Lamed Vav. We're holding in the middle of the daf. We already got to almost the middle of the daf. So we're one page up, one line up from the middle. Omar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, what Rish Lakish said yesterday against Rabbi Yochanan, namely that if you do Chalitza or Yivam, so a woman who is pregnant, it doesn't matter whether it turns out that the pregnancy is terminated. The chalitza will not help at that time. The yibum will not help at that time. Now that's a very fundamental kind of halacha. I find it difficult to believe, says Rabbi Elazar, that a din like that should not appear in a Mishnah somewhere. If Rebbe puts the ikar dinim of a Masechta into a Mishnah, you might have to do a lot of work to get out all of the implications from the Mishnah. But it's got to be there in that Mishnah somewhere. So, Efshar Ita, is it possible that Rish Lakish, Lahad Rish Lakish, is right? Velot Nanma B'matnitin, and there's no Mishnah that is Merame, is that that's the halacha? I'm going to look through the Mishnah again with this in mind. Nofak, he goes out, duck, and he's medayik in the Mishnayot, Ashkach, in the end, he finds, indeed, what he considers to be an ironclad proof to Rish Lakish in the Mishnah. That's not. Ha'yishah shalach ba'alav vitzarata, the Medinat Hayam. Okay, a woman is living in town. Her husband and the other wife go together on an overseas trip. Ubo v'amrula meit ba'alech. Witnesses come and they say, your husband died overseas, but she cannot get married and cannot get yibum, even though there were no children, unless she knows that the other wife wasn't pregnant. So reizu lo tinaseva lo tityabim, achetida shema mu'ubereti tzarata. What happens if the other wife is pregnant and she goes and she gets Yibum and it turns out she's living with this guy, a brother who is an Isser Eshetach? So she's going to have to wait until she finds out that there is no child. Now obviously she could wait until after 9 months have passed, by which time either there is a child or is not a child. And then she could get chalitza, right? And then for sure she's handled the problem. If the child was viable, it's already born, and everything is fine. If the child had died, so then she got chalitza. So one way or the other, she's okay. But what we're talking about over here, obviously, is during such time as the tzarah might be pregnant. So that, she's got no choice. She's going to have to wait. Now, I understand, says Rabbi Elazar, why it is that she cannot get Yibum. Okay? Bishlama Yibum Elo, obviously. I mean, Shami Evlat Shel Kayama. If it turns out that the Tzara is viably pregnant, she's been sleeping with her husband's brother. So she can't do that. It's a suffix. If you've got the Yisrei Shetach, which is an Yisrei Diorita, so she can't take a chance with that. But why not do Chalitza? Why not do chalitza? I understand why she can't do chalitza now and then get married now during the 9 months of a possible pregnancy. I understand that. Because, as we said, if a pregnancy is a viable pregnancy, as Rav explained yesterday, it's only the vlad, the actual birth, that is going to be matir her. And therefore, the chalitza is not going to do anything if there was no chiyuv of chalitza. Because in this case, even Eliyahu HaNavi would tell you, you know, there's no chiyuv of chalitza because there's a viable child here and you can't do chalitza now. Okay, so obviously, she cannot get married because she doesn't know. But, okay, that's the suffix, fine. But why can't she get chalitza immediately? I mean, right now there's a brother available. You know what, she's going to take chances. Maybe she'll never find a brother. I mean, let her get chalitza immediately. It should say she get chalitza. And all it should say is don't get married until after 9 months have passed. I mean, that makes sense, right? There's only one possible explanation. And that is chalitza now won't help. Because if it turns out that the child, in fact, was not viable, then Reish Lakish is right in saying that the chalitza of a mu'uberet is no chalitza, despite the fact that it turns out that the pregnancy wasn't viable. So therefore, tachlot b'toch tisha v'tin ha'sela achar tisha. So you see that Rebbe has in fact taught us a Mishnah that for all intents and purposes tells us that Reish Lakish is then is correct.
Chalitza with a tanai.
With what?
It's not a condition. Mm-hmm. Is that a wise way to do it?
Yeah, but it wouldn't help this. No, the act of chalitza is not an act of chalitza. It's not that the tanai is the issue. Yeah. Says the Gemara, hold on a second, Rabbi Eliezer, please. Well, time, I mean, let's say you're right. Okay, I could have said this, right? So, why not get chalitza and get married li'achar tish'a? I understand. What does it say? She has to know that the child was born. What is that supposed to mean? She has to know that the child doesn't have to know that, or that there was no pregnancy. She doesn't know there's no pregnancy. It should say she should wait till after 9 months. That's all that it should say, right? So obviously something else is happening over here. So there's a reason why, for some reason, we have to find out whether the tzara was pregnant. You're not explaining that. This Mishnah is clearly taking something else into consideration. What might that be? I'll tell you what it might be. El abarmine de'ahi. This has nothing to do with the machlokas v'shlokas Reb Yochanan. Has nothing to do with the question of whether she might be able to get chalitza now during 9 months and get married later. It's telling you something else entirely. And what is that entirely? That is gufa the halacha, that the din is, you have to wait until you actually know what the dispensation is of the tzara. Pregnant or non-pregnant? That's the question. Why? Because Abaye bar Ava and Reb Chinina bar Abaye both said, what happens if she got chalitza and now a year later we find out that the tzara had a baby? Well, 5 years later, the tzara had a baby. So you'll say, nothing happened. There's no problem. The Mishnah said she wasn't psula min hakahuna. There was no problem. It was as if the chalitza was meaningless. That's true. But how are people going to know? I'll tell you how people are going to know. They're going to know because you're going to take out an ad in the New York Times and you're going to let people know, right? That's the din. The din is that Besdin has to advertise. It's like Bisman HaZeh, the civil courts. You need to advertise certain things and there has to be time given for responses and so on. That's what you're going to do, correct? That's called a cruise. So therefore, if the Vod is Bar Kayama, then it turns out that you need a cruise in order to make sure that everybody knows that she's kosher lakuna. So, what's the problem? So, what's the problem? The expense of the advertisement? So, have her pay the expense. But why would we say that she can't get chalitza? Why? For the same reason that the New York Times figures, it can say whatever it wants, do whatever it wants, and if anybody sues, you put a little article in, oh, we made a mistake. Thank you very much. We made a mistake.
We regret the error.
Yeah, exactly. People are going to remember that they corrected the error. They're only going to remember the error. So therefore, the cruise is never an ideal solution. Wherever we can avoid a situation where we're going to have to come to rely on a cruise, oh, God help us. Obviously, we're going to try to avoid the situation. Because Dilma Yikinish Tavi Bechalitza, might be a lot of people that know about Chalitza, but very few people who read the article in the New York Times. And therefore, they were not Bahakraza. And those people are Atila Meima. Oh my God, I was there. I saw Besdin being Matir a Chalutza to a Kohen. There's obviously no problem with Chalutza marrying. I saw the Chalutza myself. And then I saw the chief rabbi at the wedding to a Kohen. You're calling me a liar? Here's another 10 people that were there. Who remembers the New York Times advertisement? And therefore, we try to avoid that. And therefore, what does this have to do with the Machlokas Reish Lakish and Reb Yochanan? Nothing. So forget that Mishnah. Amale Abaye, forget about forgetting the Mishnah. You don't even start. The Mishnah has nothing to do. I mean, I don't understand what Rabbi Eliezer is talking about. Does the Mishnah say a word about Chalitza and Yibum? Does it say those words? Mire, lo tachalot, lo tityabem katan is what it said is chalitza yibum. It said she can't get married or yibum. Doesn't say what she should do about chalitza. Not one word about chalitza. It says lo tina seva lo tityabem katani below chalitza. Does this mission in any way imply that if she had gotten chalitza during the 9 months, and then it turns out that in fact we needed that chalitza because the vlad was not shokayoma, it wasn't a kosher chalitza? Does it say that anywhere? It's your imagination that says that. What's the problem? It may be Rabbi Yochanan is 100% correct. This Mishnah doesn't intrude on the machlokas of Rish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan, ki hu zeh. It's not talking about getting chalitza. In reality, however, there is a braita that implies that Rish Lakish is correct. Tanya kavate the Rish Lakish. A braita says, ha-choletz le-mu'uberet ve-hi-pila tzricha chalitza min ha-achim. So here it says, beferush, somebody gave chalitza. And it turned out that she actually aborts that fetus. She still needs another chalitza. Again, according to Tosfos, as we said yesterday, min ha-achim, which is generally the word that we use for chalitza psula, means you need to have all the brothers give chalitza, is lav dafka. The same guy who gave the initial chalitza can give this chalitza. However, there are many Rishonim, including the Rambam, who take it literally, tzricha chalitza min ha'achim, because that chalitza is already, it's a semi-chalitza. It's a chalitza already been done. So this is not a chalitza that is the general chalitza that is mat to the original zika. Whenever you have a chalitza like that, it's called a second-rate chalitza. Second-rate chalitza is where chalitza kola achim. The big chalitza. Okay, it's a big machloket here. A lot of Rishonim agree with the Rambam and not with the Tosfos. Omar Rava. Says Rava, okay, well, now that we have this bright like Rish Lakish, I just want to point out that there are three things in which we clearly paskin like Rish Lakish. And that is Chodaha, Gamoran. One is this case over here, that Chalitza or Yibam of a Mi'uberet is not kosher. And that's like the Braita just implied. Another case is like this. Somebody who is Mechalek Nechasav Alpiv, a person who wants to avoid the dinim of Yerusha. So he doesn't like the fact that his Bechor is going to get Pishnayim, or his favorite son is going to get just the same amount of the others. So he can be mechalek v'nechasim, which is begetter a gift while alive. So he wants to give a gift. Fine. It doesn't matter if he's riba le'echad, mi'et le'echad. He could be mashvel em et ha-bechor. He could say, I want to give the bechor the same amount as everybody else. I want to give my favorite son 10 times as much. Whatever the heck he says. He can do whatever he wants because this is a living gift. And a living gift, of course, what's in our business what he does?
It takes effect right away?
In this case, we'll see, there are cases of living wills. V'ishval emet ha-bechor, dvarav kayamim. But if he says, I want to give you my last will and testament, then we say, tough on him. He wants to take away the chelik of the bechor, the Torah gave the chelik. Lo yuchal levaker. It's not up to him. He's matneh mashekatuv b'Torah, and therefore tana'o batel. He can't decide how Yerusha works. The Torah decides how Yerusha works. He can only make this work by giving a gift, and therefore lo omar klum because of matneh mashekatuv b'Torah. Fine. Now, just by the way, just to let you know that in Baba Basra there's a major question as to whether lo yuchal levaker is a din dafka in the din of a bechor. But if he wants to give a particular property or change the orders of, you know, who's going to get what among the Pashtas, if he does this b'yom hanchilo et banav, b'yom hanchilo et banav means that he can be manchil et banav. There's a big machlokas in Baba Basra. Here we'll take the Gemara Kepshuto and wait till we handle this together. But in any event, what's important to us is only this statement of Reish Lakish. So here it says that if he talked about a Yerusha, it's meaningless. And if in this last will and testament, however, he mentions the word gift, then even if he's insisted on calling it his last will and testament, and his bequest to his children, and seems to be confused about his rights to define inheritance, as long as he mentions the word gift somewhere, whether it's betchila, whether it's besof, whether it's beemtza, mishum matana. So let's say, well, betchila would mean, I do hereby gift to my son X the following field as my bequest of his inheritance. Well, he said gift, so he understood it wasn't real inheritance. Beemtza would mean, I wish to give as a bequest the following field as a gift to my son as his inheritance. That's beemtza. And the basof is obviously, I do hereby define the inheritance of my son so-and-so as a gift. Fine. So clearly he understands that the technicality of this blessed will and testament is that it's just another fancy word for a gift document. Okay? So then he knows what he's doing, and that's all right. Says Reish Lakish, now hold on a minute. Do not think that just because somewhere in this document, which he has entitled his last will and testament, and he's got maybe 10 kids and he's defining different things. So for the first child, he writes, I am giving this bequest and inheritance as a gift. And then he continues on and says, and to my second child, for his inheritance, I define the following thing. So, but he doesn't mention the gift for the second child. Then you should know it is not a function of the document. It's a function of the particular gift. And only the particular children in which he specified gift does gift work, despite the fact that he mentioned Yerusha. But if another child, he doesn't mention gift, we don't say just because somewhere in the document he understood that he's gifting it and not inheriting, that doesn't matter. So Reish Lakish says, Lo'olam lo kana, unless he specifies the particular child, Ploni uploni yorshu, sada plonit uplonit, shenatatim lem b'matana. This is a case where the matana is be'emtza. So even if the guy is really, his language is just crazy. I am giving them a Yerusha as a gift for them to have a Yerusha. Okay, fine. So he wants to fool everybody into thinking this is his inheritance. It is, but he knows it isn't. For Araya, he specified the gift. But he has to say the gift to this child. If he doesn't, then the child that he gives as an inheritance doesn't count. He can't define inheritance. So if we pass can like Reish Lakish in that. V'idach, the third case, is where he's being kotev kol nechasav livno le'achar moto. Sounds familiar. V'etenet kol asher lo li'yitzchak. So over here, he gives Ed what is called, in modern parlance, a living will. There's lots of advantages today to a living will, because what a living will is that you give the rights to the principal or the property, or whatever the case may be, to whoever it is, let's say a charity, right? So you report to the IRS, I donated my $10 million home to such and such a charity. Fine. The IRS, of course, gives you a $10 million tax write-off. You can even do it in a way that 10% of the $10 million home is given as a gift every year, and that way you get a $1 million write-off every year, and so on and so forth. You say, yeah, that's great, but I don't want to give away my $10 million home to charity. What do? You give a living will in which you currently are giving your home, but the charity has no rights to any profits from the home, to any determination about the home. That is all yours until after your death. Then the charity gets the whole thing. So basically you have your cake in the sense of all of the profits and all of the income and so on and so forth. And you can eat it too because the IRS doesn't eat it for you. And therefore, it's a very, very popular, you know, all the schnorrers are now lawyers. You know, they go around with all the legal papers. They explain to people how, you know, this is entirely for your benefit to give us $10 million. We get nothing out of it, you understand? It's all for your advantage. So, here too, the guy, of course, he does not want his son to control his property. That's all you need to be out on the street. But what he wants to do is give his properties in his lifetime to whoever it is that he wants. He writes, obviously it could be to a stranger, it could be to a charity, whatever the case may be. We take the case of Bino. And this is with the understanding that it's li'achar moto. So, what does that mean? It means that the kinyan ha-guf of the property belongs to the son, the kinyan ha-peirot, which means all of the profits, income, and literal peirot, if it's a field and so on, trico peirot, are all the father's. So the deal is like this. Ha'av eno yachol limkor. Now, obviously, the father can no longer sell this field because he doesn't own the actual property. He only owns the income of the property. And he gave it away to his son. They should have done the ben. The ben cannot sell because, for all intents and purposes, it is currently in the reshus of the father, even though it doesn't legally own the property. But since he owns all of the income of the property, there's nothing I can do with it. If the father sells, machar ha'av, the father sells, then what he sold is whatever rights he has, which is the rights to the income. And therefore, that sale is binding on the income until the death of the father, which is the only rights that he had in it anyway. He can't sell more than he has. So then it's mechuri, not shiyamut. Who? If the ben sells, then the lokeach has nothing, meaning he can't get any income out of this property because that wasn't in the ben's reshus to sell. He has to wait until the father dies, and then he can start utilizing the property. But until then, he can't utilize the property. Okay, this is the background to the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which now Rav is coming to Paskin like Reish Lakish. And what is that argument? Oh, v'itmar, what we learned about was a case where machar haben b'chaye ha'av, if the son does go ahead and sell, and then the son dies. Ha ha. Yep. Doesn't always work out the way you want, you know. So the son goes out and sells the father's property under his nose, right? But then the son dies. Which means that the entire idea of and you will then take possession of the entire thing, including the peirot, after my death, which is part of the living will, never happens. Because there never is after my death if the son dies first. So then Rabbi Yochanan says, well, the lokeach was not kuna, because the son didn't have rights to the peirot, and the kinyan of the peirot that belongs to the father gives him actual rights in the body that is producing those peirot, and since that never accrues to the son, it turns out that the sale was a useless sale. Reish Lakish, we'll see in a moment. We'll see. Wait, let the Gemara finish. Reish Lakish says, no, kana lokeach. What's the machlokas? Rabbi Yochanan amar lo kana lokeach. Why? Because he holds that kinyan peirot ki kinyan aguf dami. Basically, the father's rights to these peirot give him actual rights in the body. It's not that you can separate the peirot. How does he have a right to peirot, which don't even exist yet?
The body being the field.
The field. So the only way it gets the right to those peirot is that it gives him specific liens on the property itself through which any peirot that are engendered are his. But those aren't rights that appear when the peirot appear. Those are rights in the property, which are innate in the property, in which case, if those rights are never transferred to the ben because of the ben's predeceasing the father, then you're left with a pickle. The lokeach wasted his money because he took a chance and he ended up never taking possession because the lien for the peirot was never taken off. Reish Lakish amar, not true. Peirot are yours when they're produced. You have no specific liens on the real estate. You only have liens on the production of the estate. And therefore, kana lokeach, because kinyan perot lav ki kinyan aguf dami. In this, says Rava, we also pasken like Reish Lakish. Continues the Mishnah. Sorry? Eina v'lacher...
Reish Lakish doesn't say it's
a well, that's a given if it's kinyan perot. I mean, what? Oh, what do you mean? How you have... It's so much not our senior here. You mean how you could sell peirot in this case if you don't have a lien? Ein avlat shokayama. The next.
But when you go to the heirs of the son.
In English.
When you go to the heirs, if the son died, so it should be go to the heirs of the son. Why not?
Yes, that is possible if that's what the father had given. But in this case, the question is whether the t'nai that the father made was ever mekuyam.
Well,
He said, when I die, I give it to you. If you're not there, then I never make this knife giving it to you. I don't like your kids. Okay, but again, this is a side issue. We bring it in here, agav and agav. And we're trying to figure out, since halacha is like Rish Lakish and Arsa, you're bringing in something that's unrelated to us. Ein avad shel kayama, next case that the Mishnah brings, is if the vlad turns out to not be a viable child. So then, if it was a viable child, what happens then? So if it was a viable child, we said that even the chalitza that was given before does not asher her to a kohen. That the end of the Mishnah that says, Ein avlat shel kayama, it says yikayim. The yikayim, turns out, the guy did something wrong, and we're saying he's allowed. I mean, he did something terribly wrong. Because in taking her as a yavama, and it'll turn out that it was a vlad shel kayama, it turns out that he has been sleeping with his brother's wife the whole time. Because if the vlad shel kayama, she wasn't a yavama. And nonetheless, if it turns out that he was right in his gamble, okay, fine, let him stay married. That's what our Tana says. Not everybody agrees to that. Actually, mitanei mishum Reb Eliezer amru, not true. Because of the fact that he took that risk, the Rabbanan give him a knas. And the knas is, he has to divorce her. Omar Rava, Rabbi Meir, for Rabbi Eliezer, Amru Davarachat. When Rabbi Eliezer says over here that the Rabbanan give a knas for taking a woman who at the time that you took her was Asura, despite the fact that she becomes Muteret afterwards, is very similar to another Psak Aloch of Rabbi Meir in a similar case. The similar case is, in general, we have concerns that if there's a real biological evolutionary concerns, right? In other words, what animals will attempt to do is to make sure, and there's all kinds of important elements that describe the way that you have physically evolved to avoid these kind of issues. It is important for any animal to make certain that another animal, another male, does not get hold of the female that he has impregnated. All right, for whatever reasons. There's murder of the children and so on. Or there's attempts to, in any event, assert his pregnancy over the other pregnancy. This even accounts for the shape of penises. They're shaped in a way that pulls out any sperm that was there from other animals and so on and so forth. This is a major theme in evolutionary history. And therefore, the Rabbanan were also gozer, that if a woman is pregnant, or if a woman is nursing, you want to make sure that she does not marry another male who may not care about her pregnancy, and indeed would be happy to impose his pregnancy over hers, and to also make certain that he doesn't impose a pregnancy during her nursing period, which will then destroy the quantity or quality of her milk, and therefore cause her infant from the other husband he doesn't care about to die. And therefore, we do not allow you to marry a nursing woman. So for 24 months after a birth, another guy's not allowed to marry her. Suppose he does go and marries her. So over there, Rabbi Meir said the same thing. You have to divorce her. Even after the 24 months, you took her be'isser, now you have to get rid of her. That's the same thing that Rabbi Eliezer is saying over here. Let's see that inside. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying the same thing as Rabbi Meir, asserts Rava. Rabbi Eliezer, what we just said, about the case of getting married to your brother's wife when there might have been a viable pregnancy. And Rabbi Meir is the case of Lo Yisa Adam Yulberet Chaveiro Umeinek Et Chaveiro. You have to be careful not to marry another man's wife. V'im Nasa Yotzi V'lo Yachzir Olamit, Rabbi Meir. If you did, you have to be motzi her, which means you have to give her a get, and you're never allowed to take her back even after the 24 months, which is similar to what Rabbi Eliezer says, even after it becomes clear that the fetus was aborted, you cannot keep her anymore because of the fact that initially when you took her, you were taking a chance. Same thing is true over here. Initially you took her, you're taking a chance on somebody else's child, now we don't allow you to take her back. Chachamim omrim, the Chachamim say, look, you have to divorce her now, but after 24 months, you want to take her back, you're welcome to take her back. And that is similar to the case over here. After the fetus is aborted, you want to keep her, you can keep her, which is essentially exactly what we find over here. Machlokas, Rebbe Eliezer, the Tanna of our Mishnah. Omele, Abaye, says Abaye to Rebbe, I understand. Well, there's no connection between the two cases. Rebbe Meir would not necessarily agree with Rebbe Eliezer, and Rebbe Eliezer would not necessarily agree with Rebbe Meir. Look, Dilmalohi, Adkan lo kama Rebbe Eliezer, why did Rebbe Eliezer say you give a knas over here? The guy took a chance on an Isser Dioraita of sleeping with his brother's wife. I mean, that's a really serious issue, right? So, lo kama Rebbe Eliezer, we should call Poga b'Isser Eshetach Dioraita. For God's sake. Obviously, in such cases, maybe somebody who gives a knas, aval hatam. I mean, over there, okay, so Rabbanan said, the off chance, and this, and you don't want to give the baby Similac, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, no. It's not the end of the world. So maybe the Rabbanan would not have given a knas. And maybe Rebbe Eliezer would have agreed like the Rabbanan over there arguing Rebbe Meir, and they say, you know, you want to take her back after the 24 months, it's not a problem. I mean, he didn't do anything so terrible. So Atam de Rabbanan, maybe Rabbanan severely, that arguing Rebbe Meir. Or I could say just the opposite. I could say, you know what? Rebbe Meir was makbid over there to give a knas. You know why? Because people have a tendency to not take an issur de Rabbanan seriously. And because of that, say, no, mele, by Similac. It's because of that, the Rabbanan often are mechazik their words with a knas, which wouldn't be worried about in a diorite. How many people are going to take a chance on being pogea in their brother's wife? I mean, it's crazy. I don't have to worry about that because the knas people in general are careful about such a thing. To be careful to not to marry a mother who might be nursing and maybe something happened to the baby's milk. And you know, I can afford a nursemaid, whatever. No, maybe over there, Rebbe Meir said there you have to give a knas, but in the case of a dioraita, so over there, Rebbe Meir kamar hatam el mishum derabbanan. Since it's only in Isser Rabbanan, chachomim asu chizuk lidivrayem yoter mishel Torah. We often find the Rabbanan even more makbid than the dioraita. Aval hacha, since it's in Isser dioraita, who's going to do such a thing? Mifresh parshim inaya anyway. People are going to be parshim. We don't need to make a knas. Therefore, I say, it's an unrelated issue. Okay, says Rava, by the way, when the Rabbanan say that you have to be motzi, motzi does not mean a separation. Doesn't mean send her off to a Swiss holiday for the next 24 months. It means you have to divorce her. Yotzia begeit is what it's talking about. Omer Marzuta, well, yeah, I mean, that's what it says, the Ekanami. It says, Yotzi. I mean, it was only a question of being mafrish, making sure that he doesn't sleep with her and there won't be any problems with the milk. It doesn't say that. Lokatani Yafrish. She says, Yotzi. Yotzi always means begin. Shbamina. Omer Ravashu of Oshaya Bereda Revivi. Hatam Tanan. Now, the question, what is the definition that we were worried about yesterday? What is the definition of a viable child? Well, you should know. That definition, of course, we know that there is a machloket about that between the Rabban and Reb Shimon Gamliel, whether a child has to survive 30 days in order to be considered to be a viable child, or even if something happens and the child dies during those 30 days, even if we are not sure, shekololo chadashav. So as I said yesterday, nowadays we have scores that tell us whether a child is kololo chadashav and is a viable child, right? All of this. What's that?
Before 30 days, you can know this.
Immediately upon birth, we can know. Yeah, right. Yeah, they take the scores right away. And in those days, they had their own scale, which was based on the amount of hair, the keratin on the nails, and so on and so forth. You can tell whether it's a. There, they were only concerned whether it's a full term gestation, then it's assumed to be a vacho kayoma. Nowadays, we take into consideration what are the chances of survival, and that's the scale that takes into consideration much more. Much more. But in any event, this is only talking about where we don't know that it was called a chadashah. So over there, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, look, basically, you need to have kosher shah shloshim yom if you've got a 30-day survival rate. So then, okay, for 30 days, that already establishes the vlad ishel kayama, even though we don't have any scores. And it's not an afo. Now, but that means, now the Rabbanan argue over there. So you don't need Shloshim Yom, even without scores. But that means, I'll give it to Reb Shimon Gamliel, Halo Shaha, it would be a suffix, correct? Okay. What happens if, Meit B'toch Shloshim Yom, so it says, Here we have a machloket amoraim, where Itmar made betok shloshim yom, and she goes and she accepts kiddushin, thinking that, you know, well, I mean, baby was born, what can you do? Babies don't live forever. But at least we know now that when my husband died, he died with a potential child who didn't make it, but the child was born. So now I'm going to go and I'm accepting kiddushin. But really, Alib Reb Shimon Ben Gamliel, she wasn't allowed to accept kiddushin because it was a suffix, so she needed to get chalitza, but she didn't get chalitza. Now, the problem is, if she went, you'll say, okay, she's going to get chalitza now. What's the big deal? Problem is, if she's married to a Kohen and she gets chalitza now, it is a big deal. Because a chalitza, even on a suffix, will ask her to a Kohen. It's only with the flood with Shokayama that it won't be us on the Kohen. But now, she will never be able to stay with her husband if she gets chalitza. So what do we do? So Ravina Mishmeda Rava, Ravina quotes Rava saying, well, look, if she's married to a Yisrael, a non-Kohen, so let her get chalitza now. But if she's currently married to a Kohen, then, look, we're not going to ruin the marriage. So then, Eina Choletzet. Now it turns out, Eina Choletzet, why? Because we'll rely on the Das of the Chachomim who argue Bichlal on this whole din of Reb Shimon Gamliel. And they say, even Meit Betok Shloshim, we have no reason to suspect that the Vlad is a Nefel. I mean, people die for all kinds of reasons. It doesn't mean that innately the child wasn't a Bar Kayama. He got an infection, it died. So what does that prove? Right? So we'll rely on that in a case where it's going to destroy her merits. So says Ravina Mishmei Derava. But Rav Misharshia says Mishmei Derava that it really doesn't matter. It was Achadzu ve'achadzu cholitza. I don't care if she's married to a Kohen. She has to get chalitza. And that's what Rava said, not what you said, Ravina. So Ravina says to Rav Misharshia, look, you're right. Rava did say what you were saying, but that was in the night Seder on Thursday night. On Friday morning when you came back, you didn't come back to Shir, but I came back to Shir on a Friday. And the next morning, he said, I was wrong, and let's rely on the Chachamim, and you don't require Chalitza for a coin. I'm like, oh, aha. So, you're going to be mater her without chalitza. I hope one day you'll be mater chalef too. I mean, go all the way, man. You know, why just be mater this? You know? Yehei Rava, the tissue of Tarba. You should be mater chalef too. Some relate this, the question of Machlokas, whether Kohanim are allowed to eat the chalef on the keva, which is the Machlokas of Chulin, the difference between the minhag in Bavel and the minhag in Eretz Yisrael about which chalef is considered the Alam Mizbeach, which is not. He's talking about your matzah for a Kohen. You should be matzah that chalef for the Kohen. Yeah, that's right. Let's go all the way with that. So now. Sure, nice and easy. You know, take it easy.
Yeah,
sure,
but only because you couldn't get up in the morning to go to Shira on Friday.
That's what you say. Very convenient.
No, that's his attitude.
That's very convenient.
It's a big guy, right? So do you, now you get to do this sort of thing. Like, he's got this, I wasn't there, so you know, and you were, so like...
I don't believe a word of it. I don't believe it changed his mind.
If he put it up on the internet, you know, and be thrilled, then there would be no problem at
and
all.
And you could even have started with a diddly diddly dum, and then even
richer. You have to hear the Chazarish here to know there was a tikkun.
So,
put that on this.
I want to know, in a similar case here, what would be the then? We were talking about the Mu'uberet Chaviro, the Mineket Chaviro, and all of that. Forget about this question over here about the Machlokas, Shem Gamliel, Chachomim, was the Vlad Shokayama. How about where it's this Durabonan? This is Durabonan. The guy went ahead and he married his friend, his erstwhile friend's, a dead friend's wife, right? And she's nursing. Now, she wasn't allowed to do that. He's a Kohen. And we said, well, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to get rid of her, you know? You can always take her back afterwards if you like the rabbi. Yeah, but I'm a Kohen, sir. I mean, I can't take her back afterwards. If I give her a get, it's overs. What do I do? So how about the case of Gabi Mubert Chaviro, Mineket Chaviro, when he got married to a Kohen, my. Would we make this same takona? Even though if she had been married to a non-Kohen, we would have said, look, she's got to get a get until it doesn't help separation. We said no separation. Got to give a get. A Swiss holiday is not the solution. An apartment in Rehavia is not the solution. You got to go all the way, you know. Even Herzliya is not a solution. It's, you know, nothing to do. So what exactly would be the case over here? So we said that in that case, we would maybe take into consideration, this was the question of Rava, we would take into consideration the Mion, and the Chalitza, and the Chalitza, we wouldn't force an Ashes Kohen to get Chalitza, because it was Asra and her husband. I mean, in this case, we have a similar issue, obviously not dealing with Chalitza here, just dealing with the question of Similek, but the question is, would we force a husband who is a Kohen to give a get, or do we say, look, we don't want to ruin the marriage over there? We said we won't ruin the marriage by getting Chalitza, so over here we should say the same thing, we won't ruin the marriage by insisting on a get, and send her off on her Swiss holiday. Amale, what in the world is wrong with you, man? What kind of strange comparison is this? The reason that we said you don't need chalitza is because we had the sheet of the Rabbanan who argue, and Reb Shemba Gamliel who hold, that 30 days is not definitive anyway. And there is no suffix on a viable child just because he caught croup within 30 days and died, that shows that he was not a vacho kayama. Therefore, we rely on them in this case to not destroy your marriage with the Kohen. Over here, who do we have to rely on? Understand? There's nobody who says you can get away without the get. The only question was, do you have to, you know, can you take her back or not take her back? But over here, it's a big shlama. It's in that case where you have the Rabbonin who argue Reb Shimon Gamliel about Shloshim Yom. And they say, the Amri Afagav de Loshaha, even though it didn't wait for 30 days, we have no reason to suspect that it was a non-viable Vlad. So it's a Vlad Shekayom, it's a Vlad Nahayave. Fine, so Gabi Eshet, go ahead. What are we supposed to do? Ruin the marriage. Keep it to lo efshar. We have no choice in the matter. We'll rely on the Rabbanan and we won't be machmer like Reb Shimon Gamliel. But over here, who are you going to be samech on? Tell me, who are the shittas? Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir says, not only do you have to give a get, you're never allowed to marry even if you're not a Kohen. So obviously that's not going to help you. Lo yachzir olamit. Who are we going to go like the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan still agreed you have to give the get. So, fine, you say, but if the Kohen gives a get, he can't take her back. Sure. What am I supposed to do about that? Bottom line is, you need to be out to get it, and therefore, there is nothing to do. How about, can I continue just to that, even though it's late? Or, So how about, if Kitsha betoch, how about if he goes ahead and he's Mekadesher betoch shlosha? That's the anamona grusha, not that with Yibo, just the question of the potential of being pregnant. We said you're not allowed to marry this woman because we need to define whose child is whose. So the Rabbanan made a takana, always wait for 3 months in the case of a possible pregnancy. So what we did is, guy is Makadosh, a woman, and he leaves town, he runs away, right? So now he's Barach.
Hit and run.
Yeah, hit and run is right. So plegi bar ravacha verafram chadamar mishamtinan, right? V'chadamar irukayo mistayim. So one of them says, look, this guy was over on the Isser, and therefore, you know, we put him into cherem until he comes and he gives her a get and so on. The other one says, no, on the contrary. You don't have to get, insist that he get a get and take all kinds of legal measures to bring him back and to give a get. That was the point of his running away. He wanted to make sure that there would be no chance of anyone accusing him of being over. He didn't want to come to a situation in which he might end up being over and taking a woman who is pregnant from his friend. So therefore, his escape has now saved him. And we don't need to force him to write a get, because by running away, he showed us it has absolutely no intentions of being over on this issue. Exactly. Havei Uvda. And there was a case like that. And Rafram said, forget about it. Don't take any legal action. Irukei Mistaya. All he wanted to do is make sure nobody else gets it. That's all he wanted to do. Then he runs out of town because he wants to make sure that nobody pressures him to marry her, and nobody pressures him to divorce her. So that's the point. So when he comes back, it's fine. Rabbi Elazar. If Shah Ita Lahadar Ishlakish Velot and Anla Bematita, Nafak Dakveshkar, Titan. So Bishlam Yavumi, okay, I understand. Lo Hashem Yevlar Ben Kayama V'Yivka B'Yisrael Shetach, which is right, obviously. But what's the problem with doing Chalitza? Chalitza, my Lord. Bishlam, I understand to do Chalitza now and to get married now. That not. Also not, because that's the problem. I know Sothek. I mean, if Lamaisa, it turns out that the child is viable. We have to wait till it's born because the Vlad is only Mater after it's Yotze. But why can't you do Chalitza B'Toch Tisha and get married lachat tisha? No. V'latayimer tachalotz v'tinan se lachat tisha. Obviously, we're talking about another problem over here. Why do we have to wait to know the dispensation of the tzara? Bar mine da'id, abaye baraba, v'rav chingin abaye, di'amra tarvayu, shema yehi vlad ben kayama, in which case the chalitza was not a real chalitza, and therefore you'll have to take out an ad in the New York Times. So, what's wrong with that? So, no, because you know the way that works. And therefore, it's not an ideal solution. Only Abaye. I didn't even understand what you guys are talking about. Where does it say that you can't do that? Does it say anywhere, lo tachalotz v'lo tityabeim? Is that katani? It says, lo tinasei now, v'lo tityabeim now. It says, without chalitza. That's all it's saying. Does it say chalitza doesn't help? Yichol, it's thought, may be perfectly good. Ochinami desharia. But in reality, tiny about the Rish Lakish. Acholetz leaving the Muberet. Mihipila, tzicha chalitza min achin, either from all the achim, like the Rambam and others learn, or like we saw in Tosfos, lav dafka min achim, any brother. Omar Rava, ilchta kavati the Rish Lakish, the following tlat. Chada, what we just said, Irak, the Tanim Mechalek, the Chasav, Alpiv, if Reba le'echad, Umiyad le'echad, or he's Mashra the Bukhar, I don't know what he did, Dvarov Kayamim, unless he's dumb enough to claim that it's Yerush, Imam Amishum Yerush, Lamar Kulum. The truth is that even if he attempts to pretend it's Yerusha, as long as he was Katav, Bein Bitchima, Bein Besov, Bein Beemza, Mishum Matana, Dvarov Kayamim. Now here's where Reish Lakish gets involved, and this is where I was passing. Yomar Reish Lakish bela olam lo kana ach yomar ploni uploni yirshu sada ploni to ploni shenetatim. That's the point, man. B'matana v'yirshum, even if he says at the end, but he has to say on each child ploni v'ploni on ploni v'ploni respectively on the fields. Otherwise, the document as a whole is not matir for everybody. That's true. Halachat Reish Lakish. V'idach, the Tana kotev, kol echasav lebno, or to somebody else, l'yachar moto, ha'av eno yachol limkor, mipnei shenatan alaven, ha'ben eno yachol limkor, mipnei shen brushot ha'av. If machar ha'av, mechurin ad shiyamut, hu. If machar ha'ben, then eno lokeh klum ad shiyamut ha'av. And here, in the following case, is where I was referring to Reish Lakish, is Itma. Machara ben b'chayei ha'av, and then meta ben b'chayei ha'av. So then Rabbi Yochanan, lo kana lokeh. Reish Lakish rabbi kana lo, that kana lokeh. Rabbi Yochanan, lo kana lokeh, because kinyan perot ki kinyan aguftami, and therefore it didn't belong to the son when he sold it. Reish Lakish rabbi kana lokeh, kinyan perot, lav ki kinyan aguftami. Ein avlacho kayama. So then, fine, yekayin. But tanim shum Rabbi Eliezer, no. No yekayin. Bad boy. Knas. Yotzi beget. Omar Rava, which means that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer basically onu devar achat. Rabbi Eliezer hodi amaran. And Rabbi Meir, the Tanya, lo yisa adam uberet chavero mineket chavero, v'im nasa yotzi, v'lo yachzir olamit. Give Rabbi Meir. Chachomim omrim yotzi, uk v'rishki agi azmano, lichnos yichnos. Omre Abaye, mimai. Dim alohi, ad kam lo kam Rabbi Eliezer hachalim shum deko paga v'yisere shetach diorait. Aval atam derabonan, maybe it's like derabonan. And there's a world we don't make the knas. Inami, to the opposite, we could say, Rabbi Meir, it was only so matbid in the Similac case, is Mishum Derabanan, and people won't take it seriously. What do we need to make a knas? Amar Rava, I want you to know, And when it says yotzi, l'divrei chachamim, it means legally, beget. It doesn't mean a separation. If that's a separation, it would have said yafri, shmaminam. You know, in the case of the question of what defines a vlat shel kayama, so it says in the Mishnah, that kol shaba adam shel shmiyom eino nefa. But what does that imply? That lo shaz is suffek avi. Now, we had a machlokas, and I'm interested to know how it would apply to the Similac case. So, itmar, made betok shoshim yom da'amda v'nit katsha. So Ravina says that Rava said, well, if she's married to Yisrael, let her get chalitza now. Why be married in the case of a suffik, if it's a vlat shel kayama? However, if she's an eshet kohen, we don't want to get a chalitza. She's not going to be able to stay married to him. Rimishar, Shemishbeta Rava says, there's no such thing. Achatzu, achatzu, choletzu. She can't stay married to him. She can't stay married to him. Yes, it's true that the night shir Rava said that, but then in the morning he realized it was a mistake, and he had charot, and he said, we're not going to ask her to a kohen. Sharito, very nice, we're making light of this issue. I hope that one day you'll be mater chalev too. So much for your gentle and kinder attitude. Yei Rava t'tishtra avtarba. It always starts that way, you know. A little problem in the size of the machitza. The next thing you know is, chalev is mutter and you can eat at McDonald's. I hope the day comes where you'll see where you are headed, my boy, in the wrong direction. So, I want to know, is hacha gabi mu'uberet chavera mineket chavera, in our Similac case, where she was in Suala Kohen, and she's supposed to give it yet. Do the Rabbanan take cognizance of the fact that her poor husband will never be able to marry her back? And in classical conservative shul fashion and the kinder, gentler matir, which one day will be matir McDonald's, the question is, would we be matir her in this case without getting a get and substituted sered a Swiss holiday? So do the Rabbanan make a stakana for a kohen not to require a get because then he won't be able to take her back alone? Oh my God, Rafi Hashta, Bishla Mahatam Kivadika Rabban in the Polaglator Pshim Gamliel. You know, I mean, even a conservative shul needs to have somebody to be Semichan. So you don't have the Pshim Gamliel. Numelis, we're Semichan the Rabbanan, who say that you don't need to have 30 days to make it a Vlad Shel Kayama. You know, so we'll rely on that. Yafakav Lo Shavlan Ayavi. But by the Eshet Kohen, I mean, people are going to say, you don't believe in Allah at all. I mean, who are you relying on to say, we'll give a dispensation to the Kohen? Next thing you'll say is the Kohen can resign his kahuna, you know. She's an Eshet Kohen. Even the law of Shur, of Dina Kirabonim. But Allah, come on, Navit. What? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is even worse. Rabbi Meir said, even Yisrael is like a Kohen. He can't be Mazar Olamim. If the Rabbanim say you need a get. And therefore, there's no one to rely on. Itmar. How about if he goes in, he's a Kaddisher, but Toch Shlosha Chadashim, and he runs away? So, Pliga, but Ravacha, Varafra, Chadom, what do you mean, runs away? I don't care. You get him back here, you send a court summons for him with the Shamta, that unless he comes back and divorces her, he's screwed. Vachadom, no, that's why he ran away. And that helps to avoid the problem, because obviously he's not going to be over on the Isser of taking his possible pregnant wife. So Iruke Mistaye, that's what saved him from our Shamta. And indeed Avi Uvda and Rafran said, look, don't worry about it. No legal action is necessary. Iruke Mistaye.